Welcome to Conversations at the Crossroads, a ministry of Crossroads Church in Sandy, Utah, where we discuss topics related to scripture texts, theology, and the culture around us. We're glad you could listen in today. Come join us for the conversation. Welcome to another conversation. My name is Ken McCauley. With me, as always, is Pastor Matt Imadi from Crossroads Church in Sandy, Utah. And Matt, I was reading through my Bible, just minding my own business, and in the Gospels, so nothing difficult or controversial should have ever come up.
That's right.
And I came across something and immediately thought of you. In John 21, post-resurrection, we read in verse 9, this is the disciples, they've been out fishing, and when they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now, the resurrection doesn't bother me there. I'm not scandalized by it. The miracle of this draft of fishes, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is, why 153?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it's funny that you thought of me. Well, that's either a good thing or a bad thing when you read that text. Before we answer that question, and I don't even know if I have the exact right answer. Thankfully, this is not the kind of question where if you get it wrong, you're a heretic.
Right.
Now, how you answer the question could reveal how hermeneutically sound you are, because you could get really crazy with stuff like this.
Right.
And it might be helpful to point out what crazy might look like. Now, Augustine was an incredible theologian, but sometimes the church fathers did do some strange stuff with details like this. And I think I read that Augustine had some formula where if you added 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus the next number all the way up to 17, that you get this kind of multiple of 3. So this is a Trinitarian number. And I just don't get it. Like, I couldn't figure out what he was saying. It is so strange. How would anyone ever think about that or come up with that and be like, yeah, that's derived from the text? So I don't think we should do stuff like that. I think what we should do is try to understand what's going on in the passage and in the broader context of John 21, and then also understand this passage in the broader context of the book of John. And that may help us to understand why he mentions 153 fish.
Right. And it's fair to say that looking and seeing which gospel this is in is an important starting point.
Yeah.
Dr. Luke, physician,
right,
may include 153 because he's writing a meticulously documented historical,
right,
apologetic account.
Yep.
John, if we look at, for example, Revelation,
yep,
does use numbers,
right,
specific numbers in certain cases in very picturesque ways,
right,
because he's writing, in that case, apocalyptic.
Yeah, that's super important to point out because I think on the one hand, we could just come across numbers and be like, oh, there has to be a symbolism in every number and I'm going to go figure it out.
Right.
And on the other hand, we can go so far to the other extreme where we're like, well, there's never any symbolism. But that's not true. And we know there's some symbolic numbers in the Bible, the number 7, the number 12 for the tribes of Israel. Like, these numbers often have symbolic value. And like you pointed out, the Gospel of John is filled with symbolism and filled with connections between chapters and theological themes or imagery that is being developed. And so it is important, I think, to ask those kinds of questions. So I think there's a lot of things going on here. One thing going on in John chapter 12 is Jesus is revealing himself again to his disciples. So we see that in verse 14. Did I say John 12? John 21. This was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. So in this passage, we have a passage about bread and fish. In John 6, we had a passage about bread and fish, and,
yep,
there Jesus reveals himself to the disciples, but the crowds don't get it. So you have this feeding of bread, you have this multiplication of bread and fish. Jesus is revealing his identity, but people don't see.
And that's a great point, because John has a handful of sort of meta images,
right,
that he uses fairly consistently throughout his gospel. Bread is one, exactly. Water,
yep,
and so forth.
Yeah, so we're not just kind of picking up on a detail as though it's just an obscure detail in the whole gospel. There's actually details here that have been repeated in other places in the Gospel of John. What else is going on in this chapter? Well, Jesus is, again, he's revealing himself to his disciples, and he's also going to restore Peter after Peter had denied Jesus three times. And this is the only gospel out of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that records for us how Jesus restored Peter mm-hmm. after he had denied Jesus those three times. So there's just some interesting details. And some of this I'm not 100% settled on. But again, sometimes just kind of thinking through a passage helps us maybe arrive at greater clarity. So Jesus is by the sea. He's risen from the dead. He's revealing himself to his disciples. And the disciples are fishing. So verse 4, just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, do you have any fish?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. The disciple whom Jesus loved, therefore, said to Peter, "It is the Lord." Okay, so far we've got this. Do you have any question about fish? No, we haven't caught any. Well, do this. Then suddenly they bring up a great quantity. So there's lots of fish. And then they recognize who they're dealing with after this event. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. I almost wonder, and maybe I'm being a little speculative here, if before we get to Peter's restoration, it is as though Peter himself has to be fished out of the sea by the great fisher of men. Now again, these are just some ideas. The other disciples came into the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off. Then it says, when they got out of the land, they saw a charcoal fire in place, and fish laid out on it, and bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. So there's lots of things going on here. When Peter denied Jesus earlier in John 18:18, we are told that he denied Jesus while warming himself by the charcoal fire. And John now is using that exact same language in this chapter that is dealing with Peter's restoration. So Peter has jumped into the sea. Jesus, again, maybe what's going on here is he's being fished out of the water, and now they find themselves again by a charcoal of fire. But this time, not for Peter to deny Jesus, but for Jesus to speak to Peter and bring him back, so to speak, to become one of the leaders who in turn is going to fish for other men.
And this comes back to why we have to interweave beauty and aesthetics into our worldview. Because right. How powerful is the image of Peter looking across the fire at Jesus, who is about to restore him, and the last time Peter had looked across the fire to Jesus, he had betrayed him.
Exactly.
That's a powerful image.
And I don't think it's, again, I think that's intentional. In other words,
yeah.
We're making connections from the text itself. We're not just making up some Trinitarian formula. You see what I'm saying? Now, I think there's other things we need to bring into play. We both know John relies heavily on the book of Ezekiel mm-hmm. in his writings. And particularly in John, he relies on Ezekiel 47. Mm-hmm. For example, when he stands up and says, "Whoever comes to me, rivers of living water will flow from them." And it's clearly an allusion to Ezekiel 47 and what Ezekiel saw as this eschatological, this end time temple, where you have this river that flows from the threshold of the temple and brings life to all that it comes in contact with. Now, when you go back to Ezekiel 47 and you read about this temple and the water flowing from this temple, which parallels Edenic imagery and picks up on that kind of Garden of Eden sanctuary where God first walked with people, we read about this river. And so in verse 8, we read, I'll pick up kind of in the middle, when the water flows into the sea, the water will become fresh. And wherever the river goes, every living creature that swarms will live. So this river is bringing life. And there will be very many fish. For this water goes there, that the waters of the sea may become fresh. So everything will live where the river goes. Fishermen will stand beside the sea. From En Gedi to Eneglaim, it will be a place for the spreading of nets. Its fish will be of very many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. So I think another subtext to John 21 and this whole fishing scene is Ezekiel 37, and that this large catch of net of fish that Jesus allows the disciples to catch is showing again that John is drawing from Ezekiel themes, from these themes of Jesus being the temple, Jesus raising up fishers of men, Jesus's gospel being the source of life that is going to go out into the world and redeem people, large quantities of them. Can we go so far as to make some specific connection between the number 153 and Ezekiel 47? I don't know, and I'm sure people have thought about this a lot more. I actually read one guy who said, and this is where you can start getting into dangerous territory. I get this. There is at times a place to argue for gematria, where you are assigning numbers to Hebrew letters. For example, Matthew's genealogy is structured in sections of 14 with David at the center, and Dawid in Hebrew is the number 14. Mm-hmm. And I think you can make those kinds of legitimate connections. Some would argue that Eneglaim, if you assign its numbers to those Hebrew words, you do get the number 153. I don't know that I'm totally persuaded of that. The fact that John alludes to Ezekiel 47 so much, and he's clearly drawing, I think, from that imagery here, maybe, but I don't think I really want to base my whole interpretation or understanding on the passage on that. I just want to say that's interesting. I don't know what to do with it right now, but I do think there is, again, this Ezekiel imagery that's being brought in so that God's end time salvation is now going out. Fishers of men are being raised up. Peter is being restored. He is now going to go out with the other disciples and bring in this abundance, this abundant catch of fish of many kinds.
Right.
You know.
And the critical issue that we would want to bring us back to is if searching out the significance of 153 obsesses us to the point where we lose sight of King Jesus,
right,
Messiah, and this great ingathering.
That's right.
Of which we are part. Whatever your eschatological view,
yep,
then we have really lost the forest for the trees.
Exactly.
That this is about Jesus, and if our curiosity and our scripture study doesn't leave us there, then we've missed the boat somewhere along the way.
That's exactly right. Most of the things I've said about this text were themes from the text dealing with Jesus,
yep,
and what he's doing with his disciples.
Great example of how to approach texts where there are questions like this. If you have questions or comments, reach out to us at conversations@crossroadschurchutah.org.